All right, okay, so let's go ahead and continue where we left off. This is part two. The other one, we went the whole hour, so that's all good. That's a whole Iron Man match. But I was gonna say, man, but back to what you were saying, like how you got to a point where, you know, you started, you know, you had your, you basically did what you had to do because the, you know, your children, you were all they had. So in the midst of all that, when you're, because I remember you told me, you know, you were going through what you were going through with your mom. She went through 4 months of that. We were doing the solar panels. I think that was around the time where I think you bought me USBs and shit.
Yeah.
I right. still got some, bro, if you're still interested.
Oh, yeah. I love it, though. It was good.
I'll pass you some.
I appreciate it.
Nah, but I remember you were doing all that. And, you know, it was, I want you to just go ahead and let me know, like, With all the working and all the career things, I did have a little bit of stuff here, like where I was like, you say that how as a single father you have to work twice as hard to keep your children, and to keep your children, I guess, like provide.
Well, provide for them and to keep them in general, because you know government support's not as easy to come by for somebody without a job with two kids and you know baby mama drama. So most of the time the courts want to go in favor of the mother and then let them get all the support from the government. But when a man tries to do it, it can be very difficult. In fact, beyond difficult, to where they're looking for excuses to not accept you.
So, yeah, but I think it's because mostly the man is the breadwinner and they know that that's how they're going to profit. Give the mom the child support and let the man get the money to pay. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I was lucky that when I did this in early May... late April, early May, I was able in that first month to get with Attorney General, get my kids under emergency coverage that, you know, we separated, that, you know, I am putting the child support on her. And the minute I submitted for that, I got approved for TANF, Texas Assistance for Needy Families. So that was basically cash through a card to help me out. And I had to do a program for it. I had to go through a seminar. I had to do hours of paperwork to get approved. All right. But after I do all this process with the AIG, I go to South Texas Workmen's Work Center, Workmen's Commission, and they help me out to get everything done. I do everything they tell me. I go through the courses. I get approved for TANF, which is that assistance program. Then TANF allows me to get approved for CCS, Child Care Services, immediate approval, skip the line. That's awesome. That really helped me. And then, boom, I get SNAP, so I get food stamps. And the kids get Medicaid. So I was like, okay, I'm actually getting all the benefits. But I felt like I had to go through 50 more hurdles than the other girl who did one application and just ding, 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 ding. You know, everything's very straight up.
Yeah, she just fucking hit.
Yeah, she hit the jackpot while I'm over here having to really directly apply and plead my case.
It's because I guess it's just a rare case when you
it
see
it. Was a very rare case. In fact, most of the paperwork specifically says Mrs. or Miss and has no Mr. there. Because it's genuinely designed for women.
Yeah.
So I felt very off. I felt very discomforting as somebody who's always worked in my life since 16 to have to apply for government assistance again, in the sense of I need help because I'm unemployed. I'm unemployed for the first time in my life, really. And fast forward a little bit, I have all these benefits and I go to court and they're like, okay, you're going to be, I actually win the case to keep my kids as primary custodial parent. And that's a big deal because that means now I am the primary parent. And that means that my address is their home address. Mm-hmm. So now that leaves open a certain degree of problems because she could still take the kids and try to hold on to them. She could still try to fight me for custody because it's not a custody hearing. It's just where the primary residence of the child is and all the services go to.
Yeah.
So getting that done was good. But now to actually win... to win full custody, to have her not able to take my kids back or try to fight me for custody, I have to take her to custody court and win full custody. The only way to do that is to not have any government benefits. So you can't have any assistance of any kind to actually get win.
Wow.
That's the best way. So I'm actually in that process where I've already cleared myself of a lot of benefits. I have no benefits left from the state due to my employment. So because of what I've done throughout these last 3 years, I am now in a position that this year I'm probably going to be able to to take that case to court and finally win that full custody hearing. And this is not to charge her more. This is not to affect her financially or maybe
kick her while she's down or nothing.
None of that. Or not even to take away the kids. It's to solidify on paper a legal document that states the kids belong with me and all the finances that I accrued are for the children and myself. And that she cannot come and take the finances and the children away.
Yeah.
For any reason. But she is welcome to visit, pick them up, take them on trips. I'm never going to say no to any of that. It's just I don't want her to go on a trip and disappear with the kids.
Yeah.
And legally, that's the paper I need. So that's what I've been working for. And that's why, again, when after I separated from her and all this started happening, my mom got sick, I went through all this insurance stuff, and that's when I realized, okay, I'm going to do insurance. This is where my calling is. I see a lot of what's happening here. I understand everything. And I see the money that can be made. And I'm proud to say that from that crazy moment of my mom sick, my divorce happening, my kids going through, you know, they got sick too, you know, just things that happen with kids, you know. They get their cough, I have to lose work, I have to stay there by my daughter. Because when she gets sick for a good amount of time.
Yeah.
So it was a lot of stuff happening that just motivated me to, instead of buckle under the pressure, it's buckle down and push through it. Really get a grip of things and rise to the occasion. And I'm happy that a year later, I got licensed as a life insurance and health insurance agent. I did a year of Medicare there at Concentrix, which got me everything I needed to get going in my business where I do life insurance now.
Now, I got to go ahead and just add, like, all the steps that you took, you got to go ahead and let people know that it ain't easy.
No, not at all.
It's not easy. Like, people... You the way you're saying it, I know you're saying it like, you know, boom, 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 one
after another. It's like 18 months of work there.
You know, like, but 18 months of work, like, you hear that? So, like, if anybody's listening to this, because I like to share it, like, in pages of podcasts and stuff like that. Like, yeah. I'll share it everywhere, man. And it's like, people got to know that it's not just, like, you know how you said, sometimes I think fathers go with what they go through and they'll buckle under pressure. Shit, I could admit, I probably did buckle under pressure after a while because I felt like no matter what I did, it was she already had me do. She already had me no matter what I did. I remember vividly like some dudes in suits coming to talk to me, telling me that, you know, that I threatened her and this and that I do this and that I cut myself and that I'm a suicidal person. And I'm like, no, I'm not, dude. Like, dude, she's the one that cuts herself. Like, like go lift up her pant leg. Check her arms. I don't have none of that. I'm fine. But you know, it just turned into the whole blame game. And I hate that shit because I don't like to be like that. I don't like to blame, play victim or nothing. It's like, dude, it's like, yeah, we went through what we went through. And it's like, yeah, dude, let's just leave it in the past. And I'm not the same person that I was back then. And I shouldn't be faulted for who I was back then. You know what I mean?
No, yeah.
Like, nobody should. My mistakes. I shouldn't pay for my mistakes, like, to this day. You know,
that's right.
Basically it. Right. So that kind of like, that's why I wanted to do this podcast so much, because I feel like your story and everything that you're telling me, it's amazing to me because it shows me what I could have done. You know what I mean? It shows me that, hey, man, if I should have just like, I should have just like pushed forward, or I should have just done something. I should fucking gone to the general attorney when I had the chance, when she was acting crazy, when she was taking out a knife. Putting my child in danger, you know what I mean? That would have been enough for me to actually fight with something, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I never did, dude. And maybe it was out of love, or maybe it was just me scared of involving the cops and shit like that, or, you know, because it's our heritage. Like, yeah, it's just how you're raised, bro. I grew up always like, oh, man, we don't call the cops because that's snitching or shit like that.
Yeah, you don't snitch on family.
You know, like, shit like that. So it's like, whatever. But man, it just... It's when you think about it, man, like you telling your story right now, like I'm hearing it and as you're going along, and it's like, it sounds like it's easy, but I know for a fact that it's not. Like, oh, no, it's not. Like, you just said it right now, 18 months of work. Like, you literally had to do everything that you had to do because the way the system is rigged, I want to say rigged, because it's like you had to do all this shit just so you could get the benefits. And your love for your children is so solidified, or it's so real, that you're willing to lose all the benefits now, and you probably had to take steps just to do that, right?
No, oh, yeah, it was a lot of stuff.
You had, and now you had to get rid of the benefits just so you can go ahead and take the case a step further and get, what was it again that you're trying
full
to get?
Full custody.
Full custody, there you go, the full custody. And that, man, so it looks to me like 18 months and it's still going.
It's still going. I say 18 months to where I felt that I was in a great place. Because honestly, we separated, like I said, in end of April. And by the next year, April, in 2019, I was in April, the same time, I went to take my test to be a licensed life insurance agent. So
I'm sure there's a part of you that was always like, kind of like always looking over your shoulder or not. I don't know if you were ever paranoid. Like, oh man, I gotta stay on top of my shit, because if I don't, she could.
Oh, it was everything. It was from the way I presented myself on.
And the whole time, and the whole time you were doing that, what was she doing? Was she trying to fight? Was she trying? Was she all for it? All right, you take care of it.
We separated, like I said, in April, and then back in November, we tried again around her birthday, which I think was because she was getting nostalgic about like losing us and everything. So around her birthday, which is the same, her birthday is a week before my daughter's birthday.
Yeah.
So we did both birthdays together. And then in December, right before Christmas, we got into a huge argument. And it was like, no, this is why we're not good together. So no. We tried one time at the end of the year, that same 2018.
But that shows how much heart you still have for her. Because it's like, you're not doing this out of a grudge. You're not doing this out of nothing. And if there's like anybody out there that's hearing, that's thinking that, you gotta realize that you still have the door open for her. You know, you still, hey, you can come, see them, take them out and this and that. It's just that, you know, with the history that she has, that she takes off, and I don't know if she still does the party thing. I'm not sure.
Obviously, probably, yeah. I mean, she's, thankfully, after 3 years, she finally got her cosmetology license, and she's kind of going in a better direction with the barber school she's at.
Do you think
at.
That maybe she had to mature also? Because yes. I'm guessing, like, she just had the kids. She went through what she went through. She had a little freedom, and she just ran with it, man.
That's basically it.
That's basically what it sounds like. She just, and that happens with a lot of women.
And that's why I don't blame her, is that we started young. We had kids that she didn't want. She went through a mental breakdown that we did not handle well. And at the end, she wanted to be herself. She wanted to be her own person. And she ran off. And, you know, I'm hoping that she's happier now. Like I said, we haven't talked in a bit, but... You know, I left the pictures of the kids' Christmas, the Christmas pictures. I left them there with her family to give to her, and
it's just kind of shit. And that's real shit, bro. Like it's like you're not doing all this to out of spite. You know what I mean?
Absolutely not.
You're just looking for the best interest for the children, and I think that's what overall makes a good parent, is when you're just looking for the best interest of the children. And talk about your children, man. Like, I believe you told me, I think you have a son and a daughter, right?
Yeah, I have a son and a daughter. My son is about to be 7 in February.
7.
Right now, they're both 6.
They're both 6.
Yeah.
Wow, man. So this, while all this stuff is going on, these kids are still like 4, 3, 2
years old. No, they were born in 2015. So my daughter basically the month before 2016. So we separated in 2018. So they were 2 and 3.
Damn, man. So they're still babies, man.
They were babies. They were like both in diapers.
Like, a lot of women think that we men don't know what it's like. Like, I know for a fact when they're babies, it's constant attention. You have to be there. Of course, you got to feed them. You got to make sure, you know, got to rock them to sleep. Got to carry them all the time, you know. So
yeah. And like I said, they were both in diapers when I left. So I was changing diapers on 2 kids, feeding 2 kids. One was basically still... baby food because of the way her mouth was so small and she would eat very little. And yeah, I from Pampers to now they're going to the bathroom on their own and everything.
And now, so they're both what, 7?
7 and 6. He's gonna turn 7 in February, so.
And everybody's in a good place now. Like you, her, the children, they're like.
Oh yeah, the kids are great. My daughter's even gotten healthier, so now she doesn't get sick as easy. Even this COVID that hit us. This beginning of the year.
Oh man, that had to be nerve-wracking.
It was super nerve-wracking, but she barely felt it. She had one day of just feeling tired.
Wow, she's stronger than you thought, man.
Yeah, stronger. I'm so proud because there was a time where she got a common cold back in 2019 where it took her out for a month. Couldn't take her to school.
Common cold.
Common cold. Not even flu. Wow. Just light fever, just coughing and aches, and it was a whole month.
And I want to go ahead and ask you something, because I feel like when it comes to men, we don't get asked this a lot, and I know because I feel it sometimes. How about you, man? How are you doing? How are you doing? I don't think nobody ever takes the time to ask you, like, how are you doing? How's right? your mental state, emotionally? Like, I know it must get lonely, bro. Like, come on, man. Don't you ever feel like, damn, man? Am I ever going to meet a woman now? Like,
it's been a year since my last relationship.
Like, don't you ever feel like the girl that was posting, oh, no woman wants a guy with two kids?
Yeah, well, no girl wants a guy with two kids. Yeah. No, not two babies. You know, maybe two teenagers in his 50s, it looks a little better. But right now, two babies under eight, you know, they're not even, like, they still need a lot of my attention.
And you would think, man, and you would think that you would be a catch, you know, because it's like, hey, man, a lot of women want that guy that's responsible and that's on top of things with kids. Hey, man.
But the reality is not enough time.
Not enough time. You gotta be able to accept the fact that you are not going to have that time with them.
No.
Like, your children comes first.
Yeah. So that's the problem, is the children come first. The business comes first. My secondary job comes first, where I'm getting my insurance now. My agents come first. I have 14 agents that I have to deal with. Yeah. I got the two babies. I have a dog. I have a mother who's...
The dog comes first.
Yeah. No, but then the mother is also... She's doing well, but she still has medication. I still have to follow up with her. And, you know, she helps me out a lot, so I take care of a lot of her needs. And at the end of the day, that's a lot of things going on that I don't have time. And I've already tried relationships in the past. And I just feel like it takes time away from what's more important.
Yeah.
Not that the girl's not important. Girls are important. Trust me. We all need companionship.
Yeah.
But I'm only 30. So I'm like, hey, man, in 3-4 more years, kids won't need me as much. And then I'll have time.
Yeah.
But right now, the time and the focus needs to go to that. So to say, how am I doing? I'm doing well enough mentally and physically to say now I don't need a partner.
Yeah.
That was the hard part, because at the beginning I was always looking at, oh, she has a guy, I need to have a girl to look good, like, so that I don't look like the weak one. And it was ego is what you got to check at the door when it comes to the kids, because you have this ego of, I'm supposed to be the dude, I should have girls on the side, I'm the dude, I should have money to be blamed out. And it's like, no. People wonder why, when I was doing really good, like almost $8,000 a month in income, why did I just get the small car instead of the nice, you know, stylish, newer car? I got a Toyota Corolla. Brand new. I was my first brand new car.
The one that you drove up with?
Yeah, a little drove
up. The gray one?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I remember.
Okay, so I bought that girl brand new for my job. And I got it with three things, which is super base model, because I didn't want any floof. I didn't want anything extra. I wanted everything to be as manual as possible. Mm-hmm. If I could have got a manual transmission, I would have, because I wanted things that last.
Yeah.
That's why I got a Toyota Corolla too, because it's a strong, durable car. Second thing, I got it on a price that I negotiated over 5 days. The dealer hated me by the fifth day. He gave me the deal I wanted, which is bare bones at $18,000. Mm-hmm. At the time, it beat everybody else's price, and it was the car I wanted. Because again, I know that car inside and out. I can do my own oil change. I can fix every part of that car for myself. And most parts are under $100. So it was very, very... logical of what I bought.
It's strategical buying. Strategical,
yeah.
Let me just check on these dogs real quick.
You got it.
I just need to make sure that they're okay. Well, let's just stay on that topic real quick. Because
yeah, it was very, very strategic getting that car. And then on top of that, I got it. I fought for the price to be at something I can afford on a McDonald's salary.
Yeah.
I didn't care how much I was making. It doesn't matter how much I make in the future. I always keep the budget to something I can afford at less than $1,000 a month, combined bills, if I can. Mm-hmm. So, got the car at $350 a month. So I was like, that's good. For my credit rating and what I did in my past, I'm glad I qualified for that.
Yeah.
So that's what I got the car at. And then a year later, I get her a car. I get her my SUV.
Who?
My ex-wife.
Oh, wow. Still nice enough to do that.
I was nice enough to buy an SUV and then give her everything with title and everything. Like, here you go. Here's the SUV. Now you can't say you don't have a vehicle to come visit the kids in. 6 months later.
But listen to your words right there. You did that again for the kids.
Yes, exactly, for the kids. This was not to do anything other. I mean, I even helped her with school for her college. She was going to beauty school a year after we were separated, and she needed my paperwork because she was still, you know, 2 years back. We had to go 2 years back when you do a financial aid. Mm-hmm. So it still showed my income. So I did all the paperwork for her, and I even gave her the down payment on the school. It's like, here, all the paperwork's done. You're going to get approved for financial aid. They say you owe like $1,000. Here's $500. Mm-hmm. And then here's the SUV. Now you can go to school, and you can go and see your kids whenever you want. 6 months later, she only visited the kids 3 times in 6 months, and the SUV was still not under her name, even though I gave her the money for it and the paperwork. All she'd do is turn in the stuff to get her name on the paper, on the title. So I find all this out, and then I see that she wrecked it. She had hit the side of the car. So I take it away. I take away the vehicle. I bring it back to my house. I put everything under my name. I gave her more than enough opportunity, and it didn't work out. So with that, now I have my 2 vehicles. I have my business starting up because now I'm licensed and insured to do life insurance. And that's where I can say now, after all that roller coaster of emotion and thing I try to do, I realized this year I didn't want to do any of it. Just want to focus on myself. And because of it, my agency has grown. My kids are happy. They're no more being pulled left and right to try to go to family events with her family and mine. This year I did this 2021. Thanks to COVID, I'm going to say thanks to COVID on that one, I didn't even have to try or pretend to do any events with them. I just did everything with my family. And it was the calmest, nicest, most peaceful year ever. I took less pictures because I don't even feel stressed. At first, I was taking pictures to show validation, proof of what I was doing. To show this money is not going to things I want. My money is going to my kids. This is where I'm taking them. This is what I'm buying them. And now I don't feel like I have to do that as much. Because it's just about what we have. They have more than enough. Yeah. They're happy. They know where home is, and they don't question it at all.
Yeah.
So that's where I felt peace. So I no longer need a partner or need validation from others. My kids are the only validation I need, and they're smiling every day.
Yeah. Hell yeah, man. That's right there, man. To me, shit, that even makes me proud for you, man, and happy for you because, damn, man, it's hard. It's hard to be that, man, to get to that level. There must have been so much of a motivational push.
There was to
just feel like, man. And not only that, like so many people will start something and not finish. And I feel like you started it and you kept pushing and pushing and pushing, and that's why you're at where you're at right now.
You know, treat your start like a bad Ford. You just got to keep turning the key and trying different things until it finally kicks on.
Yeah.
Because trust me, I started solar, didn't work out. I managed it, didn't work out. I started, trying to do another company, didn't work out. Trying to do another company, didn't work out. I mean, that's where you say you have to fail more than the other person is willing to try to succeed.
Yeah. And that's true. I've always felt like that, man. Like, and it sucks because I started learning those lessons more as I got older. I wish I was thinking like that when I was younger. You know what I mean? And I'm thinking like that now. I don't know, man. I just, and what about, like, you know, with you being busy and working like that, how about when it comes to the balance of the work-life balance, is still trying to balance to be a dad? Is that better? Like, or do you feel like sometimes I work too much and I'm not spending enough time with the kids, or?
At moments.
Yeah.
Things are like waves a lot. And I think that's what we got to remember is we're all vibrations. And sometimes the vibration frequency goes up and down, sales pick up. You have a great month, but don't spend it all in one place, 'cause you might need it for the next 2 when you go down.
Yeah.
But that's what happens, is that sometimes I get very busy to where I'm not as there as I want to be. And I need the support of my sister, my mother, my family to be there with the kids to give me that opportunity. School helps a lot. Other activities I'm putting them in helps a lot. But I end up having to be diverted because my business needs me. My agents need me. I need to do trainings. I need to do follow-ups. I need to make my own sales. I need to do my own thing. And then I still have this part-time job that I need to do 30 hours a week at.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's a lot. But then there's sometimes like right now where I only work the weekend. And this week, I've only had this meeting and maybe 2 more. The rest of the time, I'm playing Minecraft with my son. I'm making dinner for the house. I'm there. I'm helping them with homework.
Yeah, because that's very important also, man. Like, because I know like a lot of fathers, especially me, because I used to do this a lot. I felt like, since my, in a way, my baby mama would always demand that, You know, if you're not providing her, if you're not doing anything with money, then you don't deserve to see her. So in my mind, I had it locked in that I had to get a job. Of course, you have to get a job no matter what. But I felt like I had to get a job in order to see my daughter. And as soon as when I did start working, like, I would spend most of my check on her, man. Like, I would...
They monetize your love.
Like I would be there, like, buying, like, $400 worth of clothes and shit, like, just for her. And I loved, like, going out shopping and buying her stuff and stuff like that. And it's like my uncle, I wrote this down, man. It's like my uncle taught me once, man. He taught me that. He taught me a lesson without even directly addressing it. You know what I mean? He told me some shit like, I think a lot of fathers do this. Like, we feel like just because we're providing for them, like, money-wise, that's enough. You know what I mean? But it ain't. Because my uncle was telling me, okay, it's good that you're buying her this and this and that, but don't ever forget that you still have to show face and you still have to be there, and bond with your children. Because if you don't, man, they're going to just see you as someone that's just there just to, you know, spend on them, and that's it. And he was just, he did let me know that, that putting bread on the table is one thing, but you still have to basically be there, because, like, at the end of the day, ain't nothing more richer than actually spending time with your kids. Because I feel like a lot of kids, man, they're young, they really don't understand the responsibilities of a father or you being a provider. To them, they just see their dad and they just want to be with their dad. You know what I mean? Like, that's why I wanted to ask you, like it's hard. It must be hard to try to run a business like you're trying to run, second businesses and stuff like that, and still trying to find the time, you know. And I think with you, I think it's going to be a lot easier since you have them, you know what I mean? Since you're kind of
easier.
Like there's some dads that don't have them, and it's like, when we do have the time, okay, let me have them today because we have the time. Sometimes it don't even happen, you know what I mean?
Yeah, they never accommodate to your time. And that's where I say, memories matter more than the material items.
Yes.
Memories matter more than material items. They will remember you way more than they remember the Game Boy game.
Yeah.
So they remember what you do with them. So we have to make those opportunities to make memories. Now, it is way more difficult for a parent who's not in the home to have those small memories. Because I get the privilege of having the memories of the jokes we make on the car ride to school, when I pick them up and the stories they tell me, taking them to the HEB and buying the little candies and getting the dinner of the night and having them involved in it. Those memories matter.
Yeah.
It, they don't want to see big gestures of you taking them to the park and doing special events. Those matter. They do. But it's all the everyday stuff that really adds up.
Yeah.
And that's something that a parent who's not in the home does not get to have.
Yeah, like, one thing that I've noticed, like, when it comes to, like, me being in these children's lives, I noticed that in the beginning, the oldest one, he's, like, 14 now, 15. And so you're talking a kid in his teens. When I came into his life, he had a lot of anger.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he already had anger, and I'm guessing it stemmed from how his dad would treat them, right? And I, right off the bat, I told him, man, like, I could tell that you have a lot of anger inside. With time, you're gonna see that all that anger, man, you don't even have to have it with me, not in this house. Like, you're gonna see, man, it's gonna slowly fade away, and this and that, and you're gonna see that I'm not like a bad guy or nothing like that. I'm not here to hurt your mother or nothing like that. And now he's like the most softest guy now, man. I'm glad that he don't have those anger issues no more. And again, it came from just talking to him, spending time with him, being around him, understanding his situations or what he feels. And, like, I basically became his counselor, man. Like, I would talk to him like he my homie, man. Like, you know what I mean? Like,
and that's something I want to touch on, is that communication is key. But not just communicating, being present when you're talking to them. So that's when you said earlier, how do you balance it? I say to anybody, you might not get all the hours in the day to talk to your kid, but if you spend 30 minutes with them, make sure that 30 minutes is focused on them.
Yeah.
That's the difference. So when you had those conversations with them, you were focused on talking to him. You weren't distracted by your phone or other things or making it other things problematic to where, oh, I don't have time for you. No, you focused on them, and they appreciate that, and they open up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the thing I tell people, is that it's not about how much time you spend. It's about the quality of time. Yeah. So it could be 15, 20 minutes or 30 minutes. But if you really focused on them, you weren't on your phone, you weren't watching a movie, you actually talked to them, you'll be surprised what you get.
Yeah, man. And that's what I've noticed. Like, lately, You know, with work and stuff like that, like I try to find the balance, because sometimes it's like you get home or like you're out of work, right? And you don't feel it, bro. You just don't feel it. And I could tell like he's going through something, and he even tells me like that he wanted to talk or whatever. We could talk later or something like that. And honestly, sometimes I'm just not feeling it, man. And I'll just tell him we'll talk another time. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But it makes me feel bad, because it's like, damn, man, I feel like I'm not being there for him. But it's because sometimes I also feel like, it's like I tell him all the time when we do have our conversations, it's like I tell them, like, I'm not trying to be like the super, super dad, stepdad, whatever, the super stepdad, but I want to make sure that when it comes to you boys, I'm going to raise gentlemen. I want to raise gentlemen. I want to make sure that y'all are going to grow up and be all right. But the only way that I feel like I could do that is by being truthful.
Yeah.
Telling them what the world's really like. You know what I mean? Because I feel like sometimes like moms try to protect their sons.
Yeah.
But my chick is actually more realistic. She knows that with him now having like a girlfriend at 15, I'm all like, letting you know, bro. She, as much as she could be your first love, she could be your first heartbreak. And it sucks, because when that happens, we're the ones that have to pick up the pieces. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? And I'm ready for all that. I'm ready for all that. But it's just crazy, because like those situations, man, like right now your kids are like 7. So right now, no girlfriend, no boyfriend, nothing like that. Right.
No.
So thank God. So it's just crazy how I, from being where I was to just jumping into a relationship and being in these situations the other like months ago, like when I said, there must have been some sort of emotional distress amongst the kids, because the middle child, he would cry, or he would come talk to me telling me that sometimes he just feels like he's useless. And for a child to feel like that, I felt it, bro. I started crying with him. I started telling him, I never want you to feel like that, because when you're here, I see him always helping his mom with the laundry, with everything, helping her fold her clothes, everything, man. I remember at that time I was on a cane because I had fucked up my leg, and he was helping me pick up things, stuff like that. Like, hey, can you help me with this? Get my shoes, you know? So I told him, I never want you to feel like you're helpless, like useless or nothing like that. And so he would have, like, so, and I'm glad that since I've been here in their lives, it's like, They're not thinking like that no more. They're not like in those negative thoughts no more. Like, you know how you said how you create memories? I feel like we have the best memories when we're here on the dinner table and everybody's just laughing. That's like beautiful. I think I told the oldest, I said my favorite time is when we're all on the dinner table, because I feel like that's our time, because I'm busy working. My woman gets out till like 5 or 6. The oldest is sometimes never here because he's like with his girlfriend, you know what I mean? And it's like, and then it turns into that, bro. And later on, the other two boys are going to grow and they're going to want to have their girlfriend.
And they're going to leave, and then it's just going to be you too. And that's where I tell people, it's like, sometimes you got to take that moment and appreciate your kids where they are instead of where you want them to be, because they'll be there soon and they'll be gone. Yeah. So that's why when it comes to me, and then when they tell, I've had friends tell me, why don't you get a relationship? Like, dude, it's just a waste of time right now. My kids need me more than that. And the little bit of time I'm giving them right now is going to change a lot of their future and make my life easier when they're older.
And not only that, I think if you ever do get in a relationship, there's a certain type of woman that you're going to have to find yourself in a relationship with, because she's going to have to be very understanding and know that, hey, man, that you are the type of man that's going to be about your shit, like about the shit that you have to do as a family man, as a father, as a businessman. If she can have that in her head and knows the type of man that she's with, then yeah, I got this with someone.
Yeah.
That could probably be worth it, because, I mean, it's badass that you were able to do it all by yourself. But, hey, man, if you can find a woman that can give you that extra help, and still give you that love on the side that only a woman could give you.
Right. It is beautiful. And it's something that what I tell people is, don't search for what you're looking for. Just be open to what's available to you. Mm-hmm. Doesn't mean you have to accept everything. Sometimes you got to say no.
Yeah.
And learn to say no. Learn to say no to jobs you don't really want. Learn to say no to people you don't really want in your life.
Yeah.
And that means relationship and friends. Because sometimes you have friends that You want to hang out with. You miss those buddies and those good times. But you know what that cost you.
Yeah.
Opportunities. It cost you time. Cost you what you've progressed out of. You know, you don't want to hang out with your friends and think, hey, you know what? I can smoke and watch that be the one that sends you to the hospital.
Yeah.
So we got to be careful of what we put ourselves through and who we put ourselves around. And I got rid of a lot of friends in these last 2 years because they were diverting my time away from my business and my kids. Same thing with girlfriends. I've had girlfriends and I had to let them go because they're diverting time from away from my kids and my business. And it's like, oh, that's really self-centered on the business portion and then the kids. It's like, no, kids are my priority. They're my legacy. My business is my legacy. These two things together are going to work hand in hand to one day, maybe my daughter will take care of the business. Yeah. Maybe my son will expand on it. But I can't let those things happen if I'm not educating them about what I want and what's proper of a gentleman and a lady and what they're expected to learn, because we can't depend on schools to teach them anything.
Yeah, schools are not going to teach them that.
They're teaching them how to do a job. I'm trying to teach them how to run a business.
Yeah.
How to be good people.
How to be a good, I was about to say, and how to be a good person.
And that's something else I tell people is that it's hard to be a good person sometimes because I've made a lot of wrongs. I've hurt people around me. And not intentionally, sometimes yes, intentionally, sometimes not.
Sometimes you just gotta be an asshole, man.
Yeah, and it hurts. It hurts to be the bad guy. And you think to yourself, how can I not be the bad guy this time around? And that's something that's something fuck I took into creation. Yeah.
So they gotta be an asshole sometimes.
No,
so.
You do. But how can I be a better asshole? How can I be how can I be a logical asshole? I am not being a direct asshole because I'm arrogant and rude. But I'm being an asshole because I'm defending my rights. I'm defending my right to the freedom of my thoughts, the freedom of where I want to go in my life. And you know what? Maybe I'm being an asshole to you, but it's to break the tie because you're not understanding what I'm saying.
Yeah.
True. And you know what? Your life is going down that path. I'm going down this one. Sorry. Maybe we'll meet up in a better situation with better minds.
True. Sometimes some people got to catch up with other people, man. There's levels to it. I feel like there's always levels to it.
Yes.
Like, I've always liked being able to talk to someone that could match me intellectually on a level of conversation where it's like, oh man, we could meet up here and we could just talk about anything. And that's always awesome to find. And I just feel like with you, man, you can go anywhere with it. You know, you can talk about, like you said, man, when you said on the text that, oh, you're an open book, you really are an open book. Like,
oh no, yeah.
And that's what's dope because... And man, that's how you get those real conversations. That's how you get those real conversations that either they need to be heard or they should have been heard. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Sometimes like I talk with my cousin outside and he's like, oh man, we should have recorded this shit, man. This shit should have been in a fucking podcast. We're talking some real shit right now, you know? And it's like, damn. And that's why I decided to kind of bring the podcast back, but I wanted to do it with guests, you know? That's why I wanted to have you over. So you can go ahead and just speak your truth, like... You know, because I feel like when it comes to being a father, a single father, like people don't put that out there, man. They're always talking about the single mother, which is nothing wrong. I take nothing away from single moms.
Yeah, no, me neither.
Nothing away.
I've raised by a single mother.
Yeah, I did want to go ahead and touch on that too, because that's where I was heading at. Well, because you were actually, you was actually raised by a single mom and you didn't have a father in the picture.
Yeah, but
is that a part of the motivation as well?
Yeah, I guess, you know, when you're raised from a nurturing mother, it makes you want to be nurturing, either to what you're doing, what you're growing. And then with my kids, it was automatic. It was like, I always saw my mom taking care of us and what she needed. So I tried to do what I wanted as a kid, knowing that we had two parents at the time. Now by myself, it was even more so. It was like, I don't want to be the dad that I didn't have. And I didn't want to be the mom that my mom was. She was a great mother, very nurturing, very loving. But she had to work 40 hours a week. She had to do extra stuff to get in her position. She's been working 21 years at HEB. She worked 10 years in the grocery store before that at Albertsons. And I grew up around grocery stores. I grew up around her work because it was going to my grandma's and getting dropped off at school and then going to see my mom to go back home. She worked all the time. So that's why I looked for an opportunity where I could have more freedoms and work and make a good income, but be there for my kids.
So the way is like, it is true, man. You kind of learn from what you, like the way you were raised and what you came from. Like, I'm sure seeing your mom like that, it was like, man, I don't know. not in a bad way. I mean, she did what she had to do, right? But you start thinking like, man, I don't want to end up like that. Like, I know I have to find a way or figure out a way to do better and have the time. And
that's not to say she didn't do great, because now she...
No, she did an amazing job. Like, I'll say right now, man, she did an amazing job, man. She raised you to be now, and she should be proud more than anything, because, and I'm sure she is.
I'm pretty sure she is. Like, yeah. Appreciate
it. A lot of Mexican moms don't say it.
Yeah. Like, my mom. No, she does, because she's very happy of where I've got it, and especially in this last year.
It made me cry, man. I have it in my wallet. It made me cry because my mom is not the type that'll tell you I love you. That's my mom. Oh, like, okay. My mom won't say I love you unless she's drunk on New Year's Eve. Quiero mucho, mijo.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, my mom won't say that. Like, I remember, like, me, I would always tell her, like, I could tell her on a random text right now, hey, mom, I love you, and she'd be like, okay, you know what I mean? Like, so seeing, I guess, seeing everything that I've become now and just being able to do all this, man, like, that's probably my favorite piece of her, but.
Beautiful.
Yeah, like, I feel like, and so when my mom, I think on my birthday, she got me, like, this little card, and it said something about my son and how she was proud of me, and fucking bawled into tears, bro. Cause I was like, cause like as a, I feel like I don't know about you. I feel like with you it was more about just being a father, but with me, I was always looking for that kind of like that approval of just wanting to make at least one of my parents proud. Because even when I brought my dad over here, there's a sense of me that just wanted him to see where I was, for him to say like, "Damn, mijo, I'm proud of you." He ain't even say it. He just said it, like. Ah, de cuando hacemos carne afuera, you know what I mean?
No, you're very, yeah.
And I don't know if that was also like a part of your push too. You know?
It was, because when she got sick and we almost lost her, it was like, I didn't want her to pass away thinking that her son was jobless, in the middle of a divorce, losing everything. Like, that would be the worst thing.
Yeah.
So when she got better, it was like a push that before she goes again, or before she really goes.
To
feel that I was at a good place, that her son had made it to
where...
Wouldn't have to worry, yeah. That's what I wanted for her.
Yeah, that's love right there, man. That's love right there. That's love on a deeper level that people won't understand. It's like this shit that kills me, man. Like, my mom, we've been struggling for so long, and she was trying to get, what's it called, housing?
Okay, yeah.
And she had been on, you know how they put you on the long waiting list?
Year
and
two.
I know that she wanted that already for the longest time. And I remember this one meeting that we had, and we never had meetings like this, so it was crazy that at that time my cousin was living with us, and I was living with my mom. And I'll never take this away from her. This is how, when she showed me how much love she had for me, that she got offered housing, but if she takes the housing, it'll just be her, my stepdad, and my baby brother, and me and my cousin will have to just find our own way. And I remember I told her, nah, mom, well, if you have to take it, go ahead, take it. At that time, I was jobless. I have nothing. I was all, don't worry. I'll figure out a way to survive. If there's one thing that my mom ever taught me, is to survive.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm a survivalist, man. I find myself out of a way out of anything. You know what I mean?
That's why you're still here.
Yeah. And I told her, like, if you have to, take the housing, mom. Like, don't worry about me. And she started crying that, always gonna worry about you no matter how old you get. You know what I mean? Like, so it hurt me, dude, when she didn't take the housing because of me.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? And I hate that, because now she's in a situation where, like, I want to get her out of that situation because like, my stepdad's fucking up, bro, right now. And it's like, he's not doing his part as the man of the house.
Yeah.
And my mom can't work no more. She can't do anything to help herself. And I'm over here working, trying to work and help over there at the same time, pay the stuff here, but help over there too. And it's tough, man. And it's tough. And I always feel like that, man. That was a lot of love on her for just declining housing after being on that waiting list for so long. And she did that for me. When I felt like she shouldn't have done that, man. She should have taken it. I wouldn't care if I ended up in the street, man. I would have figured out something. You know what I mean?
She had a lot of love for you, man.
Yeah, man. That was the shit that killed me, because I was like, chinga, mom, you should have taken it.
But
yeah.
See, love isn't words, it's actions.
Yeah.
That's what it is that we take actions based on our love. If you really don't love something, you're not going to take action on it. And that's what she showed you there. She doesn't need to tell you, I love you every day, because she proves it when it matters.
Yeah.
And that's
what I got from that. That's what I got from that. That's why it made me cry even more, man. Because I was like, God damn. Like,
yeah.
I thought you should have done it. Mom, I wouldn't care if I stayed in the street. Like.
Yeah, but it's rough. I mean, as a parent, I don't think you could ever see your kid on the street while you're eating fat and happy in your nice warm house. I mean, it's just, it's one of those things that we just can't do. I mean.
Because what I see now, because now fast forward, it's like, I know now she probably feels less worried because I'm doing my own thing. But now I'm the one worried about her. You know what I mean? Like now I'm the one that I wish I could get her out of there or something. And it's just, man, it's just a struggle, man. But I know I'll figure out something.
And possibly you will, because, I mean, maybe this is the opportunity for you to grow and do what you need to do so that you can buy her that house and give her the retirement she deserves.
Yeah, man, I need to get into the insurance.
Hey, man, the insurance is a great game where I can help a family protect their financial future if, in the case of the breadwinner passes away. Or I can help the kid invest in his future and put money away and hide it so when they need it, instead of borrowing from a bank, they can borrow from themselves.
Yeah.
So like my kids both have very big policies that are growing cash value. So I pay $100 a month between the two accounts, but I could pay up to, I believe it's $250 per account if I wanted to, and max out the cash value. And what the cash value means is that right now at $100 for the two of them, they are seven. By the time they are 20, they can pull out $20,000 each.
Yeah.
And that means that they can pull it out for a brand new car when they're graduating college, going to college. They can use it towards their business.
Basically setting them up, building up, setting up and building up them for a better future, man.
Yeah. And I set it up in a way that when I make extra money, I can fund more money into that and maybe make that money grow more. Same thing I have for myself. So it's not just about paying off the death claim and, oh, I got to bury the funeral. Forget the funeral. That's the smallest part of what I care about. I care about hiding money, investing money, growing your money, and then using your money. Mm-hmm. That's what matters to me. And that's what I help people do. And I get paid really well doing it.
That's some awesome, man. Awesome. That's cool, man. See, you see, everybody has a game.
Yeah.
Everybody has their hustle. Like when I get into my hustles, like when I started doing the beef jerky thing, I did it because I love beef jerky. Yeah. And I just like, oh man, I just wonder what happens if I could make my own jerky. And then I started noticing that, damn, this is pretty good. I actually wanted to have some jerky ready so you can try, but I didn't have the time. But
we can work on it because, I mean, jerky is something that can sell really well and move really quick. And before you know, with internet, you could be selling it all across the nation.
Yeah, man. I've already shipped out I've shipped out to Florida, to Abilene, Texas. I've shipped out to North Carolina. I've already shipped out to places. People buy me pounds, like 2 pounds, like worth and shit. Like, so it's like, it's cool. Like, I see myself like, and the crazy part is that I have a passion for it. That's the thing. Like,
you have to have a passion.
Making it. I like making it. I like going on a trip. Oh man, I wonder if I can make a bomb ass flavor with this. Like, so it's pretty cool. It's pretty cool. And then, you know, the whole USB thing, I feel like I want to take that to a next level. Like, I want to get into maybe figuring out how I can make my own app, my own streaming service or something. Like, it would be cool. Like, something like a Netflix, but more cheaper and with better categories. You know what I mean? That'd be dope.
I mean, it's possible. Tubi's on the rise. And that was just some, you know, garage project from what I can hear. Some other country guys just made a new Netflix and made it free with commercials. And it's like, the problem with people is they have ideas and they don't take action.
It's hard, because you kind of don't know where to start, but it's like the way I tell myself, like the way you were talking about, sometimes you just got to fail at things. You just got to throw yourself in it and see what you get out of it and just continue, like, because I also have like a shirt machine in the garage where I was like, I haven't used yet because I need to buy some other things. So I kind of want to get like a shirt thing going on and because I'm pretty creative when it comes to ideas and what I want to put on shirts.
Yeah.
So I want to do shit like that. You know what I mean? I want to do like shirts and I don't know, man. Just I have a lot of ideas, man. A lot of ideas.
Well, when you have a lot of ideas, sometimes it's hard to focus on what you can do best, right? So what I always say is just start at everything and then see what's catching your attention and what's capturing the attention of the others. And then consistency is your friend. Don't expect your gains to be overnight.
Yeah.
You're not going to see gains for a while. And it's going to take work and dedication. The two biggest things I take from business that I've learned over this course is when you do something, fully invest yourself, do it right, and give it the full effort, because you can't really judge yourself.
You can't half-ass it.
Yeah, because you can't judge a product on half-ass effort, because then if that's all you're going to give, you're never going to succeed in anything. But if you give it all your effort, don't expect to keep up with the top-notch competition. Remember, Amazon is not where it is today because it started there in 1999. No, it started in a very different place.
Yeah.
So remember, humble beginnings and grow it slowly, progressively, but give it your all.
Yeah.
And then see if it really works out. Give it a good amount of time. I always say 3 to 6 months to really fine-tune what you're doing and see if it's going to work or not. And then don't get caught up with the people you bring on. Because you might bring on partners, you might bring on reps to sell your product, make your product, work with you. And they might be friends, they might be cousins, they might be people you've known. And don't get fully invested with people who are not fully invested with you.
Sure. That's true.
That's how I want to put it. Basically,
if you're going to have partners that could probably share like the same dream or maybe the same passion.
At least the same passion. Sometimes the dreams are different because you're the owner. You have a goal you want to set and they just want to do a job.
Yeah, true.
Right? And that's perfectly fine. Sometimes you need the guys who just want to do a job so they can do the job and get it done. But what I mean is when somebody's starting to fail you in production, fail you as, oh, I'm not making the sales. I'm not making the items on time. I'm giving you excuses. There's a certain point where you have to learn how to fire your people. And it's hard when you hire friends and family.
Yeah.
Especially in a startup.
It's because it's not only because it's hard, not only to hire them, it's harder when you got to fire them. You know what I mean? Like, because it's family. It's like, oh, man.
So it's a very delicate process, but you have to know when to tell somebody, you know what, I appreciate everything you did for me, but it's not working out and it's just a waste of your time and it's not the product I want. So either we can work on this to be better, or I'm going to go ahead and respectfully just tell you, you're good, we're good.
Yeah.
You know, something like that, but release yourself from bad employees and bad customers. I've had a lot of agents who try to hire agents that caused them chargebacks. When I started this business, I got a really good guy who did really amazing and then burned my bridge and charged me $4,000 in chargebacks, which means he made $4,000 and left me with the debt. So a chargeback happens as a customer cancels. The money that we were given up front in our commission gets taken away. But since they already gave us the money, they can't take our money back. They leave us with a debt.
Oh, okay.
He left me with $3,800 in debt. From money he made in total.
And like he didn't bother calling you about it or?
No, I had to send him to collections. Oh. To the point of where I've sent him to collections. In total, I've actually had agents leave me with over $8,000 in debt.
Mm. Damn.
So when I say you fail more than you succeed. Hey, I've been doing this for over a year now. And I've succeeded. Still learning. I've made more money than I've lost. But I've lost money. Yeah. In investment leads, in gasoline, in mental state from all the shit I had to do. and then downright, agent goes, makes money for himself, says, you know what, this is not for me, cuts and runs, and leaves me with the bag holding that I owe all this money. And I had to send them the collections or pay a piece of it and do my thing because I'm still in the business. I still need to continue to run.
Yeah.
So yeah, I lost 10 G's, almost 10 G's, 8,000 something, and I've gained over 50. In the last year. So it's like, it's a good balance, but it's hard work. And some people can go so into the negative, they never recover.
Yeah.
I've met a lot of people I've brought into the game and people that have come in on side games and they're just not doing well. They're just not doing well. It's a hard game to get in. It's a hard business to run and you have to do it right because trust me, there's so many people out there selling this product and I devastate their sales every time because they're offering simple stuff that is just to cover funeral costs, just to cover a certain thing. And I come with this whole understanding of how to explain it to a person, of how we're going to cover the death, we're going to cover this, we're going to fix that, we're going to save for this, and let's work on that. And by giving them an actual strategy, I always beat up these guys who are just trying to do quick, easy sales.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's work. But the smarter and the more you put yourself into it, the more you can help people and the more they want your help.
And not only that, the more it's like a, how do you say, it's like a craft. You really, like, once you get into the details of it and the way you learned and the way you pitch it, and not only that, like, the way you strategize with it, with enough time, it just becomes like a second language, man.
It does.
You already know, like, what to say, how to say it. You already, I don't know if you do it face-to-face with people.
I do all the things.
Yeah, so you could already tell when someone's getting reeled in. You know, mm-hmm. You could already tell, like, you know, you could already tell that, hey, I know I'm going to get to this person. This person's, like, actually listening to me, you know, because some people will, like, just hear you and just be like, oh, no. You know what I mean? But yeah, man, it just takes a lot of practice when it comes to just, like, whatever you decide to do in life, if you do it, like, the way you said it, like, you're completely devoted to it, not half-assing it, putting all your effort into it. Like you said, humble beginnings, maybe in the beginning you're not going to see that much. But with time, it just starts flourishing, man. Like,
yeah, it does. And you made a point there where it's like, oh, it's hard to get started. My biggest thing I see with people getting started in any business, is they plan. They don't take action immediately.
Yeah.
And I'm going to say the opposite. Sometimes you got to take action and then develop the plan as you're taking action. Because it's only until you make that first step that the rush of information of what you're supposed to do happens.
Yeah.
And then you can actually take care of things accordingly. But when you're planning for something you don't know nothing about.
Yeah, you're planning for, oh, just in case this goes wrong, then we'll do this. Or planning, oh, I'm going to do this and do that. And sometimes when you plan, you never get anywhere. Sometimes it doesn't even get started.
Exactly.
You're planning, you're too busy planning that you, and it's like, so have you started? It's like, no.
You burn yourself out, yeah.
Because I'm still planning, and it's like, nah, man, sometimes you just got to throw yourself in there and learn as you go. Like, learn as you go. You make a mistake, learn from it. All right, recover. You know what I mean? Recover from it and just keep going.
Now, some jobs are harder than others because, like, in our position, if we make the wrong action and we go with the wrong company and we get captive, mm-hmm. we can be locked up with a company for a certain amount of time, 6 months to a year, and we can't sell because we chose the wrong company. Now they won't let us sell for anybody else. So that's where sometimes planning is necessary. And I tell people, do your research into what you're going to do. But at the end of the day, once you do enough research, which I say, take it like a job, take 40 hours of the week and do real research for 40 hours. In 1 week, if you can't find the information that you're trying to do, then either you're not really putting the effort in or you're not really trying at all. Because the internet is a vast wealth of information.
Yeah.
And you will find people asking you to get hired. Any job you're looking for, you're going to find somebody getting hired. Somebody hiring for that position. Talk to them. Go through the interview process. Say no at the end. But now you know the questions you want to ask. You know the structure you're looking for. And if it's even fucking for you.
Yeah, true that.
So I always say, take the interview you don't expect to take. Go apply for the job you don't think you're ready for, and take the action you're definitely not ready for, because it's how you're gonna get ready.
Yeah, sometimes you gotta get out of that little comfort zone or like the norm. Like, you know, so many people will be like, nah, I'll just do this job because that's something that I already know, or something like that. And then just going ahead and trying out a job that you just got an interview for and you know nothing about. But now you never know, man. Maybe you can get better benefits there. And not only that.
And skill set. Because I got a job. I just got a job out of nowhere when I had lost my job at the... When I was quitting my job at the mall because I got tired of the mall. And I wanted to do sales. I wanted to do something more. And I went to a DirecTV store. Sorry, to a DirecTV local retailer. And I was like, are you guys hiring? And they're like, no. Sat there on the couch. I'll wait for the manager to show up. That was some rep. They didn't come all day. Left. I was there for 4 hours. Next day I go in. They're like, what are you doing here? And I'm like, I want to apply here. I think this is a good job. I'm looking for something in this, and I want to do sales and something. I want to do something. They're like, all right, we'll see if somebody will talk to you. Nobody talks to me. 3 hours later, the owner walks in. He's like, what's this guy doing here? He's like, he's here to talk to somebody. He wants an interview. He's like, we're not hiring. He's like, yeah, but he wants an interview. All right, let me talk to him. After I talk to them, he's like, all right, we talked for a quick bit. I leave. He says, let me think about it. I come back the next day, I sit on the couch one more time. He walks in, he's like, oh, this guy's still here sitting? I thought we hired him already. And that's how I got one of my best jobs. Because that job that I pushed myself into gave me knowledge on how to run a business, how to run a marketing strategy, how to run multiple campaigns, and how to actually monitor and see how the campaign is working. Not just do like, oh, a Facebook thing. Like how they actually run the phone numbers. How you can get to the 8x8 system and have different phone numbers call your cell phone. And mm-hmm. how to manage multiple equipments through multiple companies, through multiple warehouses. Wow. And all that experience made me a beast in applications. After that job, everybody wanted to hire me.
Damn. Now, that's last 20 seconds. Wow, that's 2 hours down, bro. 2 hours down. Wow.
Sorry I talk so much.
Nah, it's cool.